The following Compass presentation, taped live at a Stealing the Mind Bible conference, is by Pat Boone and is entitled Christians in Film and Television. For a complete listing of all Compass Bible teaching tapes, call 800-977-2177 or visit our website at www.compass.org.
Thank you. I'm full tonight. I'm really full up. I'm full of emotion. I'm full of faith. I'm full of excitement and delight that something like this is happening. I congratulate all who had the vision to do it, and I am heartened so much by the fact that you're all here. The only negative that I feel is that, the room is semi-dark. A lot of you have come, Bill said there's 35 states represented here, and you're just sitting there comfortably in the semi-darkness, and I'm worried that if you're not asleep yet, that you may soon be, no matter what I do or say. And so I don't want to butt my head against the wall, and it occurred to me I'll do something I've never done before. I don't know if it'll do any good, but I'll just tell you this, that as my time progresses, and they told me I needed to be through by one. No, they did not. They didn't impose a time limit, but they did say you are the last for tonight, so take as much time as you need, but I know that they expect me to take no more than an hour, and I'm hoping that I can do and say what I want to say in that amount of time. I am not going to be just talking. I want to show you some things, evidences, because my topic, as was assigned to me and what brought me here, in spite of the fact that, you know, we've been going through this terrible trauma with my grandson, I had to cancel other things. Very understandably, people let me not keep commitments that I had made, but this one situation I wanted to attend. I wanted to be here because I feel so strongly that we Christians simply must take back as much as we can the worlds of media and entertainment for not only our good, but to preserve our nation. And so, since you are interested in that, and I've been asked to talk about it, I said, can I talk about Christians invading the media and entertainment? He said, yeah, I want to just insert that idea. Because, interesting, stealing the mind of America. I like the phrase, and I thought, well, maybe that's why they asked me to come. They wanted somebody knowledgeable about heavy metal. Maybe... And I see somebody saying, what do you mean by that? Well, I did go through a heavy metal period several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and it had to do with an album, you know, I made of heavy metal classics. Big band jazz, though, the music was big band jazz. It's just that, you know, it took a while for people to sort that out. Meanwhile, I made a funny appearance, I thought, on the American Music Awards, you know, wearing an outfit that Dick Clark had prepared for me, with Alice Cooper, who, the king of shock rock, who has become our brother and attends a men's Bible study every Tuesday in Phoenix. And he doesn't talk much about it in public, but I know from my own talks with him and from with his wife, and I know what he's doing with his life. I know it's real, it's deep, it's honest. And so anyway, here were two Christian brothers that were going to come out and swap images. That was Dick's idea. And he would come out in a golf cap and a V-neck sweater and white bucks and maybe carrying a glass of milk. And I was going to come out in that leather outfit with some, you know, paste on tattoos and the choker and all this. And like the joke was, we've swapped images. I'm Mr. Heavy Metal and he's Mr. Milk. Well, and he agreed to it, and so Dick had the costume made, and then at the last minute, I mean literally the day of the show, he got cold feet. And he decided not to do it. I often felt he put on white shoes and it just did not fit his image or his persona. He may have gotten seasick, I don't know. And so he said, no, I'm just going to go out like I always do. And so he thought because he wasn't doing it, I wasn't going to. And so then I did, when I was introduced by him as the future of heavy metal, I was enjoying shocking the king of shock rock as much as the audience. And I had no idea that people, particularly Christian people, were going to take it so seriously and actually believe that I was in a midlife crisis and that I was abandoning everything that I'd ever believed and been committed to all my life and career, and was now going to try to be Mr. Heavy Metal Rocker, you know. But what it did do, and we got it sorted out, you know, and I think most Christians and everybody understands that this was an album I was very proud of. It got me back on those charts for the first time in 30 years, and it also attracted a new audience of mainly college-age kids who ran out and bought the record the next day. And now you say, right on, dude, you know. And of course the bikers and the heavy metal fans, they think somehow I'm one of them. And so I did invade that portion of the world of entertainment in the most surprising way. So it was a good example, really, of what I've been trying to do in my whole career. So it's bothered me more and more that the mind of America has been stolen by the media and by the calloused, profit-oriented people in not only entertainment, but media. And it's hard sometimes to know where one ends and the other begins, because media has become largely entertainment. And you know that from your local news and even the national news, whatever the hot topic is, if it's about Julia Roberts or if it's about Robert Blake, if it's about whatever it might be, and if it's anything salacious, all of a sudden it becomes more important than national policy, defense, the budget, anything. They're going for ratings. That's the media. Entertainment, they're just going for the bucks. And I've been part of both of these, you know, for now 40 years. Now, before I really get going, I want to try to build in a little sort of a meter, and I've never done this. But I'm going to ask you a few times through this evening, should I quit or keep going? And if you want me to keep going, say, go, Pat, go. Wait a minute. I haven't asked you yet. But I would like to hear what it might sound like. And if I don't hear go, Pat, go, I'll know, hey, it's time to wind it up and get off. Even though toward the end of what I want to say and share with you, I want to premiere something that is electrifying, if I do say so, and will invade the media in a way they had not anticipated, not the media and entertainment, in a way that they would resist if they could, but they can't. It's a smooth stone that God has put together, and it's going to rock their world. But before I ever get to that, let me ask you, should I stop or keep going? All right. If I hear that, well, we got some good guys up front now. I want to hear from the back too. Then I will keep going. I'm going to, you know, you've heard from John Ankerberg, and he's been defending the faith so valiantly for so long, and I admire him greatly. Didn't know I was going to follow him. I thought I was going to follow Jerry Falwell. And of course, he and I have been involved in a number of things, and I was going to refer to him as I do, as the Christian Don Quixote. He's been tilting at windmills and pursuing that impossible dream of calling America back to God, what was once and still would like to think of itself in most quarters as a Christian nation, but really increasingly isn't. And of course, he started the Moral Majority, and of course, the church and the TV programs and the mailings and the man has been just a fountain of good works and great efforts, and he's achieved wonderful results. We don't know if he'll ever accomplish that impossible dream, but nobody's tried harder. And nobody has taken more brickbats, more vilification, more ridicule, more persecution, I think, in our time than Jerry Falwell. And like that Energizer Bunny, he just keeps ticking. But a virus got to him, and so he never got out of the airport on his way here today. And that's our loss, and of course we want to pray for him. There are ways in which I have tried to, and have, invaded the media. There are good examples of so many others that have. But the scripture I want to share with you is in Luke 16. And I've referred to it enough that I could just about quote it without reading it. It's what's known as the parable of the, well, it's often called the unjust steward. It's Jesus himself talking. And in this version, the Bible, I've been reading through the one-year Bible every year for a lot of years now. This is not the only one I've used, but it's the one I've used for 5 or 6 years. The 365-day Bible, you know, it's divided into daily portions. It's just a wonderful way to read through the Bible every year. So I do, and of course, always new things jump out at me, and I'm sure many of you have had this same experience, and you just see things, even things you've highlighted before, that suddenly have a whole new meaning and depth and substance. One of those had to do with my grandson, because we've been sweating through this 10 weeks praying him back to consciousness and to wholeness. And we've seen some encouraging signs. But, you know, in just my daily reading while he was in the UCLA Medical Center intensive care, I was reading in the 18th chapter of Proverbs, and a scripture, one line that I'd highlighted before, it said, "The spirit of a man sustains him in sickness." And I thought, that's Ryan. There is no way Ryan would be alive right now after falling 4 stories, hitting 2 railings on the weight of a concrete floor. His heart stopped, his breathing stopped, his spleen was burst. No way he could be alive today except for the fact that when he was 4, he invited Jesus into his heart the way some of you have tonight. And when he was hurt, I prayed like I've never prayed before. Not, "Lord, reach down from heaven," as we've often prayed. You don't need to do that. I'm praying for an inside job. You've lived in this boy 20 years. Rise up in him. Strengthen him. Paul says, if a man has received Jesus, the Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead is united with his Spirit. And so when Ryan took that fall and the paramedics told his grandmama at the UCLA Trauma Center, she got there right after they'd taken him in. She said, "That's my grandson. How is he?" Well, the paramedic turned to her and said, "Don't get your hopes up." The scripture that rose in her immediately was from Psalm 118. "He will live and not die and declare the works of God." That rose up in her, and that's going to happen. And we had the incredible privilege of invading the media, Lindy and I, and I got to talk with the producer of the Larry King show. We were on for an hour this last Friday. Did anybody here see that? The Larry King Live show this last Friday. I thought everybody watched Larry King Live, and I guess a lot of you, you know, obviously I don't see him all the time either. A lot of times they're just gossiping about all kinds of things and asking people's opinions, and the people don't know anything either. But they enjoy talking about it, you know, and guessing. And Larry King just loves, you know, questioning, what do you think is going to happen? And what do you think should happen? But he wanted us to be on to talk about prayer while we're going through the crisis. And so for an uninterrupted hour, we got to go to 220 nations, And the show is repeated at least twice everywhere it airs, so it goes live and then repeated twice. And they estimate a potential audience of 1 billion people. 1 hour, unopposed, talking about the Lord, about Jesus, why he came, prayer, what's it based on? Does it change anything? Why don't some people's prayers apparently get answered? All these things. And I was able to get Kenneth Copeland on, who knows a little bit about God's power to heal. Max Licato, who's written all the great books. And then Dave Owen, the minister of the Vineyard Church in Malibu, where Ryan and his fiancée are supposed to be married November 17th, where they're members. And so for that 1 hour, we invaded the media in the most surprising way. And I got to say to Larry toward the end, I know God didn't cause this, but he's using it. And Ryan had said to me a few weeks before this happened, he's a Pepperdine graduate, he'd already written a script, a full-length movie script, which amazed the professionals that have seen it, which presents Jesus coming today, not 2,000 years ago, and into a world, a society that includes Peter Jennings, you'll hear more about him from John Ankerberg tomorrow, and Brokaw and Rather and Larry King himself and the ACLU and Anti-Defamation League and all the influences. But Jesus coming today and doing everything he did, but in today's society. And Ryan did a magnificent job. And in the process, he said, Daddy Pat, I became a grandfather, thanks to him, when I was 42. And I didn't want to be called Granddaddy at 42 or Gramps. And so he's always called me Daddy Pat. 24 years old now, still called me Daddy Pat. He says, nobody's reaching my generation. I want to. And God is using him to reach millions. Not through his script yet, through this terrible, freaky accident, and through the faith of his family that intrigues people like Larry King and millions of others. How do you get through something like this? He asked the inevitable question, what if God doesn't do what you're asking him to do? Will you be mad at him? Can you accept it? And we said, sure. We've had to think about this. Ryan will go right to be with the Lord. And we wouldn't take him back under those circumstances if we could. He wouldn't want to come back. But we know God has a purpose for Ryan's life. And of course we want to keep him with us. But if God has a larger purpose, God can snap him out of that coma right now. But if he chooses not to, then we will accept God's will. And I think that shakes somebody like Larry. His wife called, young wife, one of a number he's had. But he really loves this younger wife and the two kids they now have, of which he's very proud. And of course he's very aware of his own mortality and that he may not live to see his own kids become adults. And so he's asking these questions for himself. And as the program ended, he said, can you take a call from my wife? Can you go in the control room? She wants to talk to you. So I went in, and she couldn't find the words, really, to say what the program meant to her. She said, this is the finest program Larry has ever done. And she said, it means so much to me, and it means more to him than he knows. And I thank you for being willing to do this and to share your pain and your faith with us. And I said to Larry, you know, Larry, you know this scripture. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Comes from the Hebrew scripture. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod, thy staff, they comfort me. Said, we're in the valley of the shadow of death, but we're not camping there. We're going through, and he's going through with his rod and his staff, and he's comforting us, and we're experiencing the reality of it, Larry. And so all of this has had its impact, and we thank God for it, and it is one way that we would never have chosen to invade the media. But we did. And God opened the door for us and gave us the platform and the opportunity, and we thank him for it. In Luke 16, Jesus is telling a story about the unjust steward. And he knows he's going to get fired. His boss has discovered that he's not been handling things right. And so the steward says, well, I know I'm about to lose my job. Let's see, what can I do for my future well-being? So he went around to all his boss's creditors and cut all their bills in half while he had the authority to do it. It was really underhanded, and it was costly to the employer. But according to Jesus, the employer, his master said, well, you're pretty shrewd. You know, he commended him. That surprised me as I read it. Jesus says the master commended him. You're fired, you know, but, you know, you were pretty smart to look after your own well-being because you knew I was going to get rid of you. And then Jesus said the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light. And you could tell he was not happy about that. The children of this world, and these are the ones who are controlling media and entertainment right now and have stolen much of the mind of America, are wiser in their generation. They know how to do it. They're willing to commit to it. They can raise the money. They know how to get it done, and they're doing it, than the children of light. And then I shared that with some radio Christian broadcasters some time back, and I almost didn't want to read the next verse, because in this particular version it says, I tell you, Jesus, this is Jesus' words, and the King James says, make friends to yourself with unrighteous mammon, that they may welcome you when you fail or die into eternal habitations. And that stumped me. I said, Lord, I think I know what you're saying in the first part of this parable, that we should be as smart in our generation, use our opportunities. We should see what needs to be done. We have the mind of Christ. We should be able to do at least as good a job in our missions and what we're trying to accomplish as the people of this world. I get that. But what are you saying? Make to yourselves friends with unrighteous mammon. And I realized, fine, I prayed, of course, and I think he showed me. So often Christians just aren't real good at what we do, business-wise. I don't know about you, but I've gotten involved in a number of business things with fellow Christians. Turned out they didn't really know how to do what they said they were going to do. They meant well, but they didn't really know how to do it. Maybe didn't try as hard as they should. And then when they racked up debts and stuff, you know, I got stuck with them. And they admitted that they owed me, but they couldn't pay me. So, and it's like, well, we gave it a good shot. And you can handle it. And I'm on my way. And I understood, and I let that happen. But it's happened to too many other people, too. And many times Christians they're not highly respected among sharp business people of this world, because we just don't seem to be as good in many cases at what we do as they are. Not as successful. We're not as up to date. And so they don't respect, since they don't respect how we handle mammon, then when we want to tell them about our faith and want to tell them about how our friendship with God and what we believe, they don't really respect that either. So I saw that Jesus was saying, I'm giving you the ability with the mind of Christ, and I will help you use mammon, material things, well enough that you will gain their confidence. Then they'll hear maybe what you say about me and about the Lord, about God and about His plan. And what you just heard here tonight, if they respect you in business and the way you use mammon, then they may respect you for what you tell them about me. And then some of those people may get here, may get to heaven before you do, and they will be there to welcome you into eternal habitations. And that has really made a tremendous impact on me. And I have tried my best over these years to not just use my position as an entertainer, but my mind, my substance, to find and create opportunities to try to invade the media. And gradually, I found that people like Steve Case, AOL Time Warner, Philip Anschutz, who owns Quest, you know about him, from those of you who live around here, Ted Turner, people in my business, they know what I stand for, they know what I believe. But they also know that I've had some success in some of my business interests and professional pursuits. And I've had meaningful talks with Ted Turner about the Lord. I've had meaningful talks with people like Arthur Godfrey, with heads of major businesses. I'm chairman of the advisory board at Pepperdine University, have been for some years, and that introduces me to the company of and to relationship with everybody from presidents of this nation to presidents of corporations and so on. And I see that the Lord is using me to have some kind of interaction with people in very prominent positions, and I can get them on the phone. They'll return my calls. They'll respond to the letters I send. There is a respect. There is a sense that this guy knows what he's doing, and I'm willing to listen. And of course I'm imperfect, and I make tons of mistakes. We all do. But I'm trying to live what Jesus says here in Luke 16. That's why when I was invited to come here and talk about this, about particularly Christians invading the media and entertainment, I thought, I will have to leave Ryan's bedside and my wife Shirley, who said, you know, I think we need you more than they do. And I did cancel something for Easter Seals tomorrow and other things. But I said, honey, in this one instance, what's going on in Colorado can affect our nation. I feel like I have something to say and to share, and I feel like I really must go. So this is the exception. Now, I don't know if I should go on. Should I go on? All right. One of the ways that the invasion has been going on of the media and entertainment is with this Christian Film Television Commission, the Movie Guide, and the Movie Guide Awards. Are you familiar with Ted Baer? Of course, he's been here. He's spoken, but maybe not all the same people are here. Are you familiar with the Movie Guide that he puts out? And it's instructing families, informing families on a every 2 week basis about the movies that are coming out and television. And he's not always making judgments about these things, but he's at least telling you what's in them, in the films, in the music, and in the television shows. And it's a tremendous service. And just when was this? August 15th, a huge article about him in USA Today. Did anybody see that article in USA Today? Wasn't that magnificent? They're portraying Ted Baer, and the headline on the and the cover of the feature story is the G rating stand, or his G rating stands for God. And here's Ted Baer, who is you know, trained as a minister and a teacher, and he is rating the films. He's sending the information out, and he now has at the Movie Guide website, which is www.movieguide.org, he has 19 million views a week. Now, when any website gets 19 million views in a week, and particularly if it impacts the entertainment industry, the entertainment producers are going to start to pay some attention. They think, this guy is telling 19 million people a week about our movies, about our television shows. What's he saying? Now, he instituted the Movie Guide Awards, which he's asked me to host a couple of times, and I have, and it's been thoroughly enjoyable. And boy, you'd be amazed at the heads of major studios, either they or top flight representatives come to receive the awards that he does hand out for films that contain any kind of wholesome, family, Christian imagery and content. And because he's been doing this now for years, and because they've had to come to respect him, and, you know, even the most jaded, callous producer who's really only interested in money is also interested in awards. So if somebody's going to give them and their project an award, they'll show up, or they'll have somebody show up. And he has a tremendous turnout. And he says, while the Motion Picture Association of America, which is Jack Valenti, man I've known and tried to share with, and it's just all fallen on deaf ears, rates movies G to X merely by sex, violence, and profanity, Baer and his staff evaluate nearly 300 films a year by a system so complex it requires a full page of fine print. Now, when we have these awards, and they all show up, guess what else he does? he bombards them with the statistics that he's compiled during the last year and adds those to previous years about the success that G-rated and family-conscious films and films with depiction of morality and Christian values, the success rate they have compared to those that don't. And it's mind-boggling. You'd think that if you're going to put 10, 20, 30 million, $40 million into a project, you'd like to give yourself the best chance of getting your money back, wouldn't you? Doesn't that make sense? Well, he shows them over and over with the actual facts and statistics that if you're going to invest millions in a film, you have a much better chance of getting your money back with a profit if you do a film that respects family values and even has some Christian and moral content. But they don't seem to get that message. It's so perverse, it's astonishing. He says among findings in his 10th annual report, this was in USA Today, which went, of course, to millions, issued this spring, movies with positive Christian content, such as Remember the Titans, a wonderful film, increased from, that is, films with Christian content, increased from 95 in 1999 to 118 in the year 2000. Earned $42.9 million on average, trouncing films that preached humanism, paganism, or occultism. Buried films depicting sex, which earned $12.5 million on average. Those with no sex averaged $33.8 million. Films with no sex did three times better than the films on average that portrayed sex and other sordid topics. You'd think that movie people and TV producers would, just because of their interest in money, say, you know, we better get on the bandwagon and produce films that can average a greater return than we're getting with all this filth and depravity and pornography and stuff that we're wallowing in and that we thought everybody wanted to go see. And they always say, well, we're just giving the public what they want. No, they're not. And I've myself talked to some, and I've written the heads of the networks and talked about ratings. So please don't be fooled if you do a TV show that gets a big rating with some sordid theme and breaking some taboo and with women kissing women and all the other things that you ballyhoo as if it was some great accomplishment, some great thing. Don't let that fool you into thinking that people want a steady diet of that. Said if there's an accident out in front of your house and you hear two cars bump together, blow horns, you stop what you're doing and you go out and you check. Maybe you think you can help her. If nothing else, you'll just watch, you know, and see what happened. You are curious. But that doesn't mean you want that happening out in front of your house all the time. You just assume it never happened again, wouldn't you? And if people in the next apartment, if you're in an apartment, they're arguing, fighting, and wrangling, of course you'll turn the TV down at first. And you'll listen. And, boy, do you hear what she's saying to him and all that? That's okay once in a while. But if it goes on all the time, you're either going to report them to the police or move. And so please, guys, I know you have to earn a living and I know you have to get ratings, but we used to be very creative in the entertainment business. Remember there was a guy named Walt Disney who made more money in films than anybody? He made a terrible tactical mistake. He died. And other people took over the Disney name and the Disney empire, and now it doesn't stand, in most cases, for family films at all. It stands for big money and big parks, and those parks given over to whole evenings of old days of depravity and films that bolster all that kind of stealing America's minds, S-T-E-A-L-I-N-G, and particularly the minds of the young. And Walt Disney, I know if he could possibly get back, boy, he'd bring the bears and the lions and he'd bring... He'd bring a whole menagerie to try to clean house because his name has been sullied and just ruined because it doesn't represent what he wanted it all of his life to represent. So Ted Baer is doing something about it because gradually, as the statistics show, as he keeps on hammering them with the facts, the figures, the bottom line, he's making a difference. And the studios are now a little more interested in the content and getting moral content, not so interested in trying to be the first studio out there to break the taboos and to do some horrible thing that nobody else figured out how to get away with. Television, still a different matter because of cable and because there are relaxed rules on television and cable television. It's very, very sad that the upcoming Emmys, a show called The Sopranos, is nominated for 22 Emmys, more than any show in the history of television. It's a show, as you know, heard, maybe you don't see it, haven't seen it, and I don't advise you to see it, I don't watch it. It glamorizes a mafia family and makes them seem very human because the mafia don is sort of insecure and he goes to a woman psychiatrist. But the killings and the drugs and everything else and the infidelities and all of that are still going on. And they show it all very graphically and it has the air of really being authentic. And so the critics just love it, you know. They just fawn all over it. And, of course, The Sopranos will probably win more Emmys than any other show. And, of course, right behind it, with only about 12 Emmy nominations, is Sex and the City. Four young women who are committed to every kind of sin there is. And since they're attractive and since they talk so openly about it and since it's well-written creatively and everything that you can imagine and some you never did imagine is depicted and goes on the show, it's also nominated for 12 Emmys because the critics all say, this is great, the groundbreaking, cutting-edge new show. Showtime is thrilled and very proud of the fact that they are largely the homosexual network in that they have more shows that show and depict homosexual behavior and even homosexual acts and whole shows devoted to the homosexual lifestyle more graphically and openly and lovingly than has ever happened before in any medium. And so Showtime is thrilled about that. In the midst of this, all of this wholesale slide into the pit, which we're allowing to happen, is the Newsweek article. Anybody see the Jesus Rocks cover? This was July 16th. I wish Ryan, well, I'll save it, of course. Ryan would have been so thrilled about this because he loves music, contemporary music. The church where he's a member now, he and his fiance, is the Malibu Vineyard. And out of that Malibu Vineyard has come a new Christian rock group called Lifehouse. And they're crossing over. They're crossing over into pop music as well, as some of the other Christian acts have done too, to some extent. And Ryan's so proud of him, and we're playing those Christian, contemporary Christian music CDs in his ear all the time, part of his recovery, we feel. And we're reading the Word to him as well as praying over him. But boy, that music, he always loved it, and we used the CDs that he had compiled of his favorite contemporary Christian music. And of course, this makes your heart feel really good. Christian entertainment makes a joyful noise, cover of Newsweek, hot concerts, big books, new movies. And of course, there's a big story here in the middle, and a lot of you saw it. The glorious rise of Christian pop. And there's just great-looking, healthy young kids, and they're praying at the front. It says, smells like Holy Spirit, is the caption in the picture. Of course, playing on Nirvana's record, Smells Like Teen Spirit, which was decidedly not a Christian song. And it says the prayer pit, not the mosh pit, the prayer pit at a Festival Con Dios Christian rock show. It's different enough from a church service, a mother says, yet has all the moral values we believe. And the kids go for it. They love it. It's the music they love more than anything. And of course, they're thrilled that they can have the fun and they can jump and yell and shout and clap. And yet the lyrics aren't depraved. Actually, they're, in most cases, about the Lord and about good, clean, healthy things. Shall I go on?
Go ahead!
Oh, okay. Now, it's quite an article. If you haven't seen it, you ought to try to get it. One of them shows a big rock concert. Audio Adrenaline is on stage. And man, if you've ever heard Audio Adrenaline, they make my attempts at heavy metal seem very tame. In fact, the caption is, jamming to beat the devil, which is literally true. That's what they do. They jam to beat the devil. They are invading media and entertainment. They're Christians who are trying to reverse Jesus' estimate that the children of this world are wiser in their generation than the children of light. Here are some children of light that are showing they're just as wise, if not wiser, than the children of this world and astonishing them. It gives some of the facts, the figures of how well they're doing. In fact, one of the inner headlines, God, Mammon, and Bible Man. Remember what we just read about Luke 16? Use or make friends to yourself with unrighteous Mammon. Make an impression on these people, on how you use your abilities, how you use your substance. And maybe some of them will welcome you into eternal habitations. It talks about past the plate, the bottom line. It talks about Veggie Tales. Anybody familiar with Veggie Tales? Sold 22 million units. Anybody familiar with Tim LaHaye's Left Behind books? I say here he's only sold about 28.8 million. Now that gets the attention of the publishers of the world, of Rupert Murdoch. They start saying, 28 million copies. How can we get some of that? Anybody know Frank Peretti? Max Lucado? Bruce Wilkinson, The Prayer of Jabez? 5 million copies of an open challenge to live a more Christian life. This is invading the media. This is invading entertainment in a way they understand. You mean these Christians can sell $815 million worth of videos of things like Veggie Tales? They can make $747 million on music like this? They can make $1 billion on books that aren't the Bible itself? Movies? Well, they're pretty deficient there. $17 million in movies. But that includes, of course, the Omega Code and the Left Behind film. But they are impressed. Now, I'm impressed. And as I was looking at this again just a little while back today, looking at this issue, I don't know why I went back one page. Playboy goes triple X. 2 days after Playboy Enterprises announced it was buying 3 X-rated cable movie channels, a dramatic departure from the company's soft core image. Like he's always sort of prided himself on, well, we're not the worst, you know. We're soft core. We're a little more classy. Anybody ever look at a Playboy magazine and think that that was classy? Lounging in his pajamas the afternoon after a party, he told Newsweek, "We're getting a standing ovation from Wall Street because Playboy shares had climbed 30% the day they announced they were going to buy 3 X-rated hardcore channels. Because Playboy Enterprises reported a loss of almost $12 million. The Empire's flagship magazine has seen its circulation fall significantly from its peak in the 70s. And it goes on talking about him. But there's a Greenwich Village-based marketing strategist, one of these Wall Street guys, who's quoted, "There's so many alternatives to what Playboy's been doing that are down and dirty. They should have been doing this a long time ago because it makes more money." And so last year, viewers spent... Now this is... Talk about stealing the mind of America. Last year, viewers spent $465 million on adult pay-per-view alone. $465 million. And Hefner, who says he's never had any problem with hardcore porn, what a shock. Hugh Hefner doesn't have any problem with hardcore pornography. The biggest pimp of all time has no problem with hardcore porn. He's been selling women's bodies for 30 years or 40 years and become rich and chewing on his pipe and parading around with 6 young girls. And then it says, Playboy had branched out into more risque programming a couple of years ago. He claims his only daughter, Christy, was more reluctant to move into hardcore. She's a strong feminist, says Hefner. Christy came out of a time frame and sensibility that had a strong anti-sexual element. And I thought, how perverted. Here's a father and daughter. I've got 4 daughters and I've got 10 granddaughters. And I know you folks have daughters and granddaughters. The daughter is resistant to the idea of being involved in hardcore pornography. The father says, "Hey, get with it, kid. You're behind the times. We gotta, you know." He says, eventually, she came around. If you don't update what you're doing to meet the marketplace, you'll be like the dodo bird, a footnote in history. Christy Hafner was on vacation in Colorado and unavailable for comment on the controversial acquisition. So the dad's saying, look, get with it. We don't want to be just like the dodo bird. We got to be cutting edge. Well, that's what Jesus was saying. The children of this world are wiser in their generation. They're going to make more money. They're going to be very successful than the children of light. Of course, Playboy's not so eager for its enduring legacy to be hardcore porn. The new channels will be operated under its Spice Entertainment Network. That's what Disney does. Puts out the worst stuff in the world, but they do it under another name. But then it goes to the Disney bottom line. They think nobody will know. Which Playboy bought in 1999 to differentiate the channels from the less revealing Playboy brand. The move will further bolster the company's entertainment division, already Playboy's most profitable segment. We're talking about entertainment here. We're putting our stake in the soil, said Jeff Genest, the Spice Network's general manager. We want Spice to stand for the most satisfying level of adult entertainment. That certainly would be a satisfying development for Playboy shareholders. There's an Armageddon going on right now in the world of entertainment and media. One page, Playboy. Wall Street. Next page, Jesus music. And the other evidences of the Christian invasion of that alien, now alien territory. I don't know. I've already talked a while. Should I go on or should I? All right. Now, when you quit telling me, I want to play you something, a video. Some of you have seen it in the past, because it's not a new video. I have been so concerned, and I thought, somebody's got to do something about all this headlong avalanche. And I often cannot, I have the ideas, I'm entrepreneurial in nature. I see things that ought to be done, but when I try to tell other people, say, oh, that would be great, maybe you can get somebody else to help you with it. Of course, I can't right now, and it's not really my thing. And so I'm saying, well, it's not my thing either. But Ronald Reagan, when he was president, and he was facing his second election campaign, he did one of the bravest things I think any president ever did, because he staked his reelection on this and against the advice of his advisors. He was seriously concerned about abortion. So he wrote a book, a little book called Abortion and the Conscience of a Nation. And his advisors, Meese and Deaver and everybody, said, Mr. President, you know, we know how strongly you feel about this, but why don't you wait till after you're elected? And Ron Reagan said, well, nobody can guarantee me I'm going to be elected, reelected. So maybe I better use this pulpit while I have it. And he would not take no for an answer, and the book came out. It was powerful, courageous, and one of the things he said, it's a shame that the one whose life is most irrevocably affected in this matter can't be heard from. And that rattled in my head. I said, that's, you know, there's got to be a way for the little infant in the womb whose life hangs in the balance to be heard from. Very conscious of the fact that I've got four daughters and a wife, and I know these are trauma situations, unwanted pregnancies, no matter who or what or why. But out of that question, or that statement of Ronald Reagan's, came this song and video, which I produced, wrote and produced, Let Me Live. If you've seen it before, you're going to see it again.
I had a dream the other night. Never had a dream like it. So profound, so troubling. I woke up trembling in tears. In this dream, I don't know if I can describe it, I heard a child's voice, a baby, speaking to me, almost in a whisper, I think. But I could hear her clearly, full of primal joy at being newly alive. I felt deeply that child's reverence and awe at the discovery of its own existence, and I shared in the excitement. But then I heard another voice and another, and soon there seemed to be thousands, maybe millions, I couldn't count them, all in various stages of development, all grateful for life, all singing the same urgent chorus, the same fervent plea. And I realized, though, each and every one of those children was already experiencing life, not one had yet been born. Singing to me from their mother's wombs. And they're not just mindless bits of flesh. They're human beings already in touch with their mothers, with God, with life. They deserve to live.
It did invade the media at the time. It did not get played many places. It did get played on Christian television, on CBN and PTL and the Christian programs, and once in a while in somebody's program, and the song got played on some radio stations, and as a result, I've held many babies in my arms whose teenage or older mothers allowed to live because they heard that song, and they realized, oh, this isn't just it's not just a bit of protoplasm or something. It's not just a mistake I made that it's a child, and though I didn't mean to create this child, I must at least give it the chance to live. In Sacramento, about 2 years after the song had come out, a 15-year-old girl came up, 16 by then, and she handed me her little baby named Adam to hold. And she said, I just thought you'd like to hold this little boy. Your name, Adam? I'd like you to hold this little boy because he was allowed to live because I heard your song. And I was 15 and not married. And I just thought, I can't try to correct my mistake by taking his life. And I thought you'd like to hold him. Well, of course, I shed some tears. And I wondered many times, whatever happened to that particular boy? I've held others. Even the little boy that was the voice of the first one-month-old child and the three-month child, and said, I'm alive. He just threw that in. He was so exuberant. He was also hard to manage in the recording studio. And his mother took him out and spanked him twice. But he's from our home church on the way. And then his mom sent me a letter afterwards saying, you didn't know it. You couldn't have known it, but God knew. When he was conceived, his dad and I weren't married. We weren't Christians. I went to a clinic. I realized what was going to happen. I couldn't do it. I came home, fell on my knees. I committed my life to the Lord. My husband did. We married. Now we're youth directors and music directors, which is why we put the group of kids together to do this. You didn't know that that little boy, that's the voice of the one-month and the three-month-old child in this video, was himself marked for abortion, was within moments of being aborted. Now God chose him to plead for the life. And Ronald Reagan's statement, it's a pity that the one whose life is most irrevocably affected can't be heard from. Well, through this, at least one means and others, they have been heard from. They're being heard. So now Adam, I wonder whatever happened to Adam. This year, just a few months ago, just before what happened to Ryan, and I know the devil's mad at us and he's trying to make us pay for what we've got, how God's been using us in a number of ways. And so I went to Sacramento and his mom brought Adam up to me. He's 6 feet, captain of the football team. He looks like this Adam. And most valuable player, president, student body, exemplary kid. Weighs 190 pounds. And I got him up on the stage and I said, we never got a picture of when I was holding Adam before. I want to get a picture now. I said, Adam, put your arm around my neck and help me. And one, two, three, and I picked Adam up, 190 pounds, and he was helping me. And they got pictures. Then I said, let's do it the other way. I said, I think it'd be easier. And so I said, I'll put my arm around your neck. And Adam picked me up, and they took pictures of him holding me. So we've had some fun, and it made the Sacramento paper, which is invading the media with a triumphant story. But of course, I bumped headlong when I did the video you just saw into the absolute rebellion of the media and the entertainment industry to even entertain that idea, much less play that video or play that song, because it was not politically correct. It did not fit the mindset where they wanted to take everybody. So it was pretty well closed out of any kind of major exposure except on Christian television. But I was grateful for what it did get. And I thought, you know, there are many situations where that seem to cry out and justify taking a child's life. And for compassionate reasons. The older woman whose life may be endangered. The rape victim. The teenage girl that's still a child herself. The welfare mother who just can't afford another child. Those situations really do. And what about if it's going to be terribly deformed and you know it? I mean, those things seem to justify that. And so I borrowed from the Beatles. And I was able to raise some money this time from Nancy DeMoss and Art DeMoss Foundation. She caught the vision with me and helped me produce a half-hour video ready for television, which I naively thought pro-life groups are going to grab and run with and get on local TV stations. They've never caught it, though I've explained it to them many times. For just a little money, you can buy an hour on a local television station and advertise it and get thousands of people to watch something that's already been prepared and talk about it and have others. And you can take phone calls and you can raise money to do it again. And it will be actually self-perpetuating. But nobody's ever been able to quite catch that. And so I did produce the video. And I went out and found, I wrote the song first, like Eleanor Rigby, Names, Situations. I'm proud of the song. It's called There Is a Better Way. And the first verse says, poor little Tina, poor little Tina. I just picked that name at random. Poor little Tina, she's only 15, only 16. She took a chance in the back of a car. Pregnant and frightened, she looks for a doctor. He'll take the child and leave her with the scar. There is a better way. There is a better way. Love gives life and hope and joy. Love is a better way, an alternative, even in a situation like that. Rape victim, Cora Martinez. Three men abducted Cora Martinez, viciously raped her in body and soul. Will an abortion heal the distortion? Or might giving life to the child make her whole? Situations like that. And then we found the people that had lived the women that had lived those very episodes. And I just want to show you one from the full half-hour video, which is yet to be seen very many places. It's ready. It's a weapon to invade the media. But, you know, there's resistance and reluctance, even on the part of children of light. They just figure they don't know how to do it, and maybe somebody else will. This is the interview after I sing the song with a little girl. I picked the name Tina. The girl we found is named Tia, and not 16. She was 15.
Love gives life and hope and joy. Love is a better way. Nice words, huh? Nice sentiment. But you know, that's more than just a well-meaning song. That song is actually based on real experiences, real people in crisis situations who chose a better way. Let's go meet him. Clay Drayton found himself in a position that any father would fear. His oldest daughter, Tia, age 14, became pregnant. Let's see how he and his family and his daughter work things out. Tia, let me talk to you first, because you were just a 14-year-old girl. Had a date with DeMario, and you sort of took a chance. You had not planned on it, had you?
No, it wasn't planned at all.
And then when did you learn that you were expecting?
I kind of knew the same day. I found out for sure about a month later.
And then what did you do?
Kept it to myself. I think I told him when I was about 2 months.
Oh, you went and told DeMario?
Uh-huh.
And then what was his reaction at that point?
Can't have a baby. No, you're going to ruin my life, you know. And that he wanted to go to college. And
he was just 17, right?
Yes. You have to get an abortion.
And what was your response to that?
I'm not getting an abortion. And it would not ruin your life in any way. And I'm not going to in any way jeopardize your going to college or interfere with any of your plans.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to have a child.
Not just I, but
you know,
we.
We.
Uh-huh. Now, DeMario, you're a 17-year-old kid. You did not intend for this to happen. What went on inside of you when Tia told you?
I couldn't see it. I was like, I had plans and goals that had already been accepted in school, and that's where my focus was, going to school and trying to convince her to have an abortion was my immediate response, actually.
And then when she said no, how did that make you feel?
I didn't want to accept it, and I still kind of persisted in the matter for a while.
Of course, it was in the final analysis, it was Tia's decision. Tia, the moment finally had to come when you had to tell your mom and your dad. When was that? How long? How far were you?
I was 5 months pregnant when I told my mother. And she asked me, was I going to keep it or was I going to have an abortion? And I told her I was going to keep it. And she just cried.
Now, what about Papa? I am a daddy of four daughters. And, of course, I had to wonder what I would do if I were in that situation. Thank God it didn't happen to me. But, Clay, it happened to you. Your daughter was 14 years old.
Yeah, and it hit like a ton of bricks. The world just stood still. My heart dropped, and, you know, she's my first child and all of that, and, you know, we have a special love.
What happened when you and Tia got together then for that first meeting? What was your response toward her?
Well, I was really more concerned about how she felt and wanted to make sure that she knew that I forgave her and that sure that God had forgiven her.
Had you made up your mind about abortion before that? Do you have any strong feelings about it, one way or the other?
Yes, I had very strong feelings about it. Being a Christian, I knew that God's way was not abortion, and so...
Now it's your daughter, and she's 14.
Yeah, so now I'm coming face to face with reacting towards something that I believed in,
yeah.
And now I'm going to have to make a decision based upon that belief. And I was glad that she had already made the choice.
Mm.
Then my presence was just to confirm, hey, that's what God would prefer.
Let me get young Keon in here. 3 years old. Look at this handsome boy. Keon, you're quite a guy. 3 years old. Now, I know this beautiful young man must have complicated your life, Tia. You're 18. You're soon to graduate from high school. You still feel like you made the right choice?
Yes, I do.
Folks, I really thank you for sharing this very personal, intimate story with me. It's a story that's lived out in one way or another countless times all over this country. I think you've showed us, though, that with all the other alternatives, there is a better way.
That is one episode of about six in the video. Let's say it's a half hour ready for television video. And I interview the older Jewish woman who the doctor said, because there was evidence of retardation on both sides of her family, that no way could she have a normal child over 40, 45 years old, and urged her to have an abortion. And just not for religious reasons, just purely humanitarian and matronly reason. She said, I couldn't do that. And whatever form that child took when he came, he would be mine. And she gave birth to that child, risked some danger to herself. And I interviewed her and her 17-year-old son, who has already been featured in the Encyclopedia Americana as a genius. He graduated from law school at 17 and is suing the state of New York for the right to practice law. This was the kid they said would have to be retarded and deformed. And I said, well, it looks like you chose a better way. And she said, yeah, he's a good boy. And, of course, I talked to the rape victim, the mama, and her daughter that she allowed to live that was a product of the rape. And I interviewed both of them. And I go on like that. It's a little aftermath, a little footnote. It wasn't long ago, I bumped into the woman you saw in the picture that was I didn't interview. That was Tia's mother. And she didn't want to be interviewed because she had been really hoped her 14-year-old daughter would have an abortion, fearing she could not handle the birth or the child. But now she was very glad, and that little boy, Keon, it was the joy of her life. And I bumped into her recently, and I didn't recognize her at first. She said, I'm Tia's mother. We were on that pro-life video that you did. Oh, yeah. How's Tia? She's fine. She's married. Did she marry DeMario? No, he didn't marry her. Oh. Did he go to college? No, he never went to college. She says, but Keon's going to college. That little boy, he's going to college and has already been accepted in two or three. He's got to decide which one to go to. But the boy who was afraid that if he allowed his girl to have the child, he might not go to college. He never went anyway. But the little boy is going to college. Now, I know it's been long. I have another video I'd like to show you, but should I go on? I detect a diminution of enthusiasm. Right up front, I heard some good volume. Let me hear from the back. Should I go on? All right, okay. Okay, then. I'm glad, because though I had a lot of other stuff I thought I might share with you, I came too full, but... This is a world premiere. There are probably some people involved with this that don't want me to premiere this, but I thought, since the subject is invading entertainment and the media, that this is an appropriate place. Now, I expect Larry King to premiere this on a special Larry King Live program coming up in the near future. He said he would like to. It's up to his producer, who, by the way, the new producer of the Larry King Show is a Christian, and our brother, Dean Ciccoli. And he goes to the very Malibu Vineyard where my grandson Ryan and his Stephanie are members and will soon be returning. But Larry is part of this video, as is Bono, as is Faith Hill, as is Tim McGraw, as is Charlie Daniels, as is Kenny Rogers, as is Leanne Rimes, Michael McDonald, the Andre Crouch Choir, DC Talk, one of the guys from the Backstreet Boys, and on and on. It's a We Are the World type tribute to Billy Graham. And after Princess Diana died and the whole world mourned, and you know, Elton John reworked a song he'd already put out called Candle in the Wind, and he made that a tribute to Diana. It became the biggest selling single of all time. And that was fine. It did sort of all of that eclipse Mother Teresa's funeral. And I thought, gee, there's something out of kilter here. This Princess Diana, a lovely young woman. But does she deserve the world's tribute and mourning more than Mother Teresa? I don't think so. But the media was so absorbed with Princess Diana that they created all the attention. It was not so much that the audience necessarily wanted Princess Diana over Mother Teresa, but that's the way it went, because those are the choices that the media made. And I thought, boy, there's a guy on this planet who deserves accolades and approval. No, he doesn't want it more than anybody now living. And it's our friend, Billy Graham. And so I wrote a song, and then I funded it, and it was expensive. I have produced the video professionally, also expensive. Nobody's chipped in, nothing but me. Now I've gotten Steve Case of AOL Time Warner to be the honorary chairman of the whole project, because it happens that Billy Graham performed their wedding ceremony. And he loves Billy, and he's already sneaked a preview to Billy himself. But I thought you might like to see this, because when I suggested it, that it be premiered on Larry King Live, to go to the same 220 countries. And then, of course, we hope to have a live event after that at the Forum, the LA Forum, with tons of performers and presidents and everybody. And I'm just praying that the Lord will leave Billy with us through that time, and that he can be there, or maybe we'll do a remote from his home in Montreat if he can't be at the Forum. And then, of course, there'll be the television special, and we're trying to get Bud Paxson of PaxNet and NBC to carry the television special. But for the first time anywhere, here is the premiere of Thank You, Billy Graham, which MTV and VH1 and all the media will have to accept either now or in the future. They'll be playing it just like they did Candle in the Wind.
At a time when religion seems so often to get in the way of God's work, with its shopping mouths, sales pitch, and its bumper sticker reductionism, I give thanks just for the sanity of Billy Graham, for that clear, empathetic voice of his in that southern accent, part poet, part preacher, a singer of the human spirit, I'd say. I give thanks for Billy Graham. Thank you, Billy Graham.
This goes out to my hero, Billy Graham.
On the 7th of November, 1918, he was born to a Carolina farmer and his wife. Grew up long and lanky, milking cows and tending school, looking for direction in his life. He went to church one Sunday, met a preacher there, a man they called Mordecai. Young Billy heard the call, right there gave it all. As they sing, just as I am. He heard the word, got the call, took the message to us all. Said it so we all could understand.
country churches at the time and youth for Christ. People came from everywhere to hear him speak. He had no idea just how God would use him next. Till in London's Wembley Field, the Spirit peaked. He heard the word,
heard the
got
word.
The call,
he got the
took
call.
The message to our call. He said it so we all could understand.
The whole world could understand.
Around the world,
around the world.
Here at home,
here at home.
Let us know we're not alone. Oh, thank you, Billy Graham.
Thank you, Billy Graham.
Father,
radio, TV, and every type of magazine, touching millions of every color, tribe, and race, from parliaments to presidents, from kings to common folks, each one heard the truth of God's amazing grace.
He heard the word,
he heard the
got
word.
The call,
he got the
call, took the message to us all,
the message to us
all.
Thank you. I want you to pray, please, for Billy and Ruth. Billy has had Cliff Barrows and others call a hotline that we set up regularly to check on our grandson. He was conducting his crusade in Louisville in June when this had happened, and he asked everybody in the Louisville crusade to pray for our grandson, and he continues to pray for him. And now Cliff has said, please pray for Billy and for Ruth. Because their strength is fading. He's weak. He's planning to conduct a three-night crusade in Fresno in September. We hope to have, and of course I'm trying to raise all the funding for the live event, which will probably attract many more entertainers than you saw here. And even there's some that we haven't put on yet. And then the television show. But I obviously hope and pray that Billy will be there himself, though he is humble and he doesn't seek accolades, but I have been able to tell him personally, Billy, it's not that you need or want any more pats on the back. You're looking only for well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joys of your Lord. That's what you look for. He says it is. But the world, the secular world, needs to see what God can do in the life of one yielded man. They need to see this. And I believe they will. It's been the weapon has been formed. It's a smooth stone. They cannot ignore it. And at one time and another, the world is going to see this. And even the music video, the channels, and they're all going to know the song. And they're going to have to contend with, I think, a groundswell of reaction and perhaps support and demand for this because of who it is. It's Billy Graham and the life he's lived before all of us so long. And even his worst critics have to acknowledge that he's been honest, straightforward, moral, and he's lived the life that he preached. And they don't see that too much. That he is one of those children of light that has outstripped and outperformed the children of this world, and they respect him for it. And some, there will be many people who will be in heaven waiting for Billy to fall at his knees and thank him for his witness to them. I cannot imagine how many people, as well as the approbation, the approval of the Lord himself, which matters most. But still, all these people will be saying, thank you, Billy Graham, because I'm here because of your witness and because of what you helped me know the Lord wanted to do for me. I wanted to talk about another project, but I don't have a video. I was going to read you some stuff from David Barton, Character and Destiny from Dr. James Kennedy. Quotes like that of Benjamin Franklin, who said, only a moral and virtuous people are capable of freedom. The more corrupt and vicious a society becomes, the more it has need of masters. This was from a guy who was not a religious fanatic, but he was a believer. George Washington said, religion and morality are the twin pillars of freedom. This is our first president. I had things to read you what the first Supreme Court justice had to say, what other Supreme Courts have said right up to the 1930s, certainly through the 1800s, all the Supreme Court justices, every decision rendered, took into account and said, this is a Christian nation. Thomas Jefferson, the author of the phrase separation of church and state, wrote that to a church in 1802 in Danbury, Connecticut, and this man contributed more than almost anybody but James Monroe and Adams, and some also the Chief Justice John Jay to the Constitution. He knew what the intent was, and the church was worried that the government was going to maybe impose some kind of state religion, and that's what colonists had left England to escape. And Jefferson wanted to assure them that government will not enforce upon your religion. He said the First Amendment has erected a wall of separation, and he was the first that ever used that phrase, between church and state. But he went on to say it's a one-dimensional wall meant to keep the government out of the affairs of the church, but never, he said, Christian principles out of government. Have you ever heard the rest of that quote? Or do you just hear the part the media wants you to hear? Separation between church and state. And so now the courts and the justices, deluded and ignorant, I hate to say it, but it's true, they've come to the conviction and they've convinced so many Americans and teachers and politicians that there can be no public expression of faith in public or government properties or school buildings. We've allowed ourselves to be absolutely robbed, and these revisionists are stealing, S-T-E-A-L-I-N-G, the mind of America. And if we Christians don't rise up and take it back, then we deserve what has happened to us. We still can do it with God's help, because he still thunders through history. If my people, who are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their own wicked ways, I'll hear from heaven, I'll forgive their sin, I'll heal their land. He still means it. Joshua said, choose you this day. Who are you going to serve? Dylan says, you got to serve somebody. Joshua said, who are you going to serve? In Jesus' words, with your substance, with your life, with your position, with your abilities, with your intent, with your heart, who are you going to serve? Like Joshua, I speak for my family. I can't speak for you. I speak for Ryan. Well, surely. For my four daughters, their husbands, our 15 grandkids, we will serve the Lord with everything in us. Let's all do that. God bless you.
That was Pat Boone's presentation entitled Christians in Film and Television, taped live at a Stealing the Mind Bible Conference. To purchase this tape or to receive a free catalog of all of our Bible teaching tapes, call 800-977-2177 24 hours a day or visit us on the web at www.compass.org.